we're holding on Samach Beis Amr Aleph, the third line. We were talking about yesterday the whole issue of you have an Amaoret who is not careful about Tumah B'Tahara. What are the dinim in terms of depositing food by them for safekeeping, and what are the dinim in terms of assisting them with preparing food? Where on the one hand, so we have to a certain extent, you're allowed to lend them kalim, for example, because of Darkei Shalom. To a certain extent, we said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to help them with, for example, preparing dough until the water actually touches it, at which point it's Mekabel Tumah. So now continuing on that topic of what you're allowed and not allowed to do with an Amoret. So the Gemara says, Hey, Rav Yosi HaMeshulam. Mishum Rabbi Yochanan Ochiv, Sha'omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma. Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam said, testified in front of the Chachamim in the name of his brother Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan in turn had said the following in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma. Mentions on the side over here, by the way, the word ben may not belong over here. In Pirkei Avos also, you have at the end of Perek Gimel, you have where it mentions Rabbi Eliezer Chisma, so there actually you have some Sidurim, including Tilos Hashem, have the word ben in parenthesis, because, in fact, it may not be, not necessarily was it that his father's name was Chisma, it may be his name is Rabbi Eliezer Chisma, in other words, Chisma is a nickname for him. Or almost like a last name or something, whatever. Anyway, the point is, so Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam is saying Eidus, on the following din, Ein oisin chalas am ha'oretz v'tahara. Now, you have like this. Sometimes you would have, a person has a batch of dough, they wouldn't always necessarily, a person has flour and water they need to make into dough, they're not always necessarily going to do it themselves. Sometimes they would hire somebody to prepare the dough for them. That somebody who you hire is called a gabol, which means a kneader. So here we're talking about, suppose that the gabol is a chaver, so he's careful about Tumah B'Tahara, and Amaoretz wants to hire him to prepare his dough B'Tahara. So now the Amaoretz says to the gabol, look, I've already prepared I already have a batch of dough which I started preparing. I want you to finish it, and I want you to take challah from it. Then the chover should not do that. So Rashi says, because look, at that point already, it's already become tomei by the Amoretz. So now when the gabel takes off challah from it, a koyin is going to think, hey, well, a gabel who was a chover took off challah, it must be tahor. I can go ahead and eat it, and he's not going to realize that it's tomei because midrabanan, everything that an Amoretz touches is tomei. So you can't do that. If the Amoretz already began the process of making the dough and got it to the point where it was wet, where then, as we said in the Mishnah, it's Mekabel Tumah at that point, then the gabol is not allowed to get involved at that point. Tosfos says that no, it's not that, because if it was just a matter of that, there would be a way you could take a different batch of dough and designate a piece of that and use that as challah, and it would work, and that way you have challah that's tahor to give to the kohen. Rather, Tosfos says what it is it's one, the whole reason, in general, really, the Chachamim would say, why are you, a chaver, getting involved in preparing food for an Amaoretz at all, where his food is tameh? It's one thing, the Chachamim are going to allow it, as we're going to say soon in the Gemara, Mishum Kedei Chayav de Gabel, because we have to allow, the Gabel has to be able to make a living, and therefore we allow him to do things which would normally be also Derabbanan, and we give him a break and we allow him to do it. But here, how much is the Amoretz already going to be paying him for just taking off a piece of challah? Not very much. So we're not going to allow it. Mishum Kedei Chayav Shel Gabel, it's not really worth it, the amount that he's going to get paid for anyway. As opposed to, and then there is the concern, after all, that the Amoretz will touch the challah after it was designated. Which Tosfos Yeshanim adds, you know, we learned yesterday about saying that you can deposit truma for safekeeping by Yisrael Amoretz. That's different. That's not his truma, so therefore he's going to be afraid to touch it. But here the challah comes from his dough, so he may not be afraid to touch it, even if you designate it from a different piece. So therefore the Chachamim aren't going to allow it no matter what. As opposed to when you're getting paid for making the whole batch of dough from scratch, then that's a significant amount of pay. Then the Chachamim are going to allow it. Kedei Chayav Shel Gabel, because and the gabbal is going to have to arrange to do it in a way that it's not going to become tummy. So Rabbi Yossi ben Amishulam continues, Avol oisin isas chulav batara. You can make his dough, which is chulin batara, meaning, in other words, that the gabbal is being involved from the beginning. It's not that the Amaretz first prepared the dough, and then he calls on the gabbal just to designate challah from it. Here, to begin with, the gabbal is working on it, from when it's able to do makabal tuma. So that you're allowed to do. The noitel hemena kedei challah. So then the gabbal, after he finishes preparing the dough, he takes out of it a piece, the appropriate size of challah. And then what he does is he puts that piece of challah, which remember has to stay tahor. We have to be careful that the amaretz doesn't make it tamei. So he puts it in a kfisha or an anchusa. Rashi explains that these are both kalim made out of worn out pieces of that used to be. These are things that used to be skin bags, that used to be bags made out of leather that were used for holding liquids or things like that. Now they're worn out. You don't normally put, they're not makabel tuma anymore. And they're not things that you would normally put dough in, and that way there'll be a heker, for the amaretz not to touch it. There's different other opinions among the mafoshim, what a kfisha and anchosa are exactly. A different explanation is that they're pshute clay. Tosfos learns that kfisha and anchosa are pshute clay. It's not like Rashi, who says they're pieces of from leather bags that are worn out. Tosfos says they're wooden kalim that have no receptacle. They're not makabel tuma. And there's a different explanation that they are, in fact, kalim that are makabel tuma, but the chaver was careful to toivel them first. Anyway, ochshaba amaoretz lito, so now when the amaoretz comes to pick up his dough and the challah, and then he's going to give the challah to the kohen, notalas shtehen, he takes all of them, he takes the rest of the dough, and the challah, and the kalim that it's in, the enichoshesh, and the gabbal does not have to be concerned that the amaoretz is going to touch it for reasons that we're going to explain in a few lines in the Gemara. So that the chachamim allowed. So here you've worked it out in such a way that so far until the challah was separated, it hasn't become tamei, and you're putting the challah now into a kfisha or anchosa, which are not makabel tuma, or if they are, then you already toiveled them, and you're making sure, as the Gemara is going to explain in a little bit, that the Amaretz is not going to touch the challah, because you tell him something that's going to prevent him from touching it, as we'll see soon. So therefore that works, and that the Chachamim allowed the gabbal to do so that he can make a living and not have to depend exclusively on Chaverim for his livelihood, because then he wouldn't be able to make a living. So that's one example. Another example, the Ein Ois, now let's turn to another kind of thing. Now you have another kind of concern where also you have a matter of Tumah Vatara as far as Truma. And again, you have a problem where you have a Chaver who may be doing something for a living and you need to balance him being able to make a living with the Dinim of Tumah Vatara. So similarly, the Ein Ois in Trumas Zeisav Vatara. Similarly, an Amaretz has olives that he wants to be able to give Truma from, and the Truma should remain Tahor to give to the Kohen. So again, you'll have a professional called a Badad who deals with olives, who deals with the pressing of olives, and among others, takes Truma from them. So a Chover would not be allowed to take Truma from it and do it for Tara for the same reason, because the olives have already become Mukhshal Kabal Truma. What happens is the processing of olives involves, after they're picked, the first thing you do, you take the olives and you put them in a keli called a ma'aton, which is like a large bucket or something like that, where they sit there for a while and the little juice oozes out of them while they're tightly packed in there, and that helps soften them up so that later on when you're going to go press them, you'll get more oil out of them. Well, that oil that oozes out, that juice that oozes out of them is masher than the kabel tuma. So by the, and meanwhile, the Amaretz has been touching them. So by the time the Chover comes into the picture, the Amaretz has already made them tomei. You have the same problem. According to Rashi, the problem is that the Kohen is going to see that the Badad is taking Truma. and think that this truma is tahor because he's going to figure a chaver, of course, knows what he's doing and it's tahor, and he's not going to realize that the amaretz already previously made it tameh. And according to Tosfos, the vort is that since the pay for taking truma is not going to be very much anyway, then the chachamim are not going to allow the badar to do it unless if he's doing the whole job and there he's getting a significant amount of pay, then the chachamim will allow it because of kedei chayim. So similar point. But the badar can be involved preparing the olives when they're still chulin, before truma is ever taken from them. Then the badar can be involved to begin with, because then at that point they haven't become tamei yet. The notel haymena kedei truma. So now what the badar does is he sets aside an amount for truma. Umanicha bekelim shel chaver. He puts it in kelim that now on the face of it, kelim shel chaver means kelim that belong to the chaver. So the Gemara is going to ask later on, why does he need to put it in kelim of the chaver? Why can't, as long as they're kelim that are not makabel truma, like the, so Tosfos says, okay, kfisha or anchusa, we're not going to use for olives because they're not really suitable. Tosfos learns that fish of anchusa are flat and wooden kelim. You can't really use those for olives. You can use those for dough because it's a mass; it'll stick together. You can't really use it for olives. So therefore, fine. It's not mentioning fish of anchusa, but the question still remains: why does the keli need to belong to the chaver? Can it be there could be a type of keli, as we'll see later, that is not makabel truma and that belongs to the amor? So we'll take up that point later. Anyway, so he put in a keli of the chaver, which is tahor, uchshaba amaretz lito, when the amaretz comes to take the truma, to give it to the kohen, notelos shein, he takes both of them, he takes the truma with the keli that it's in, the enechoshesh, and there's no concern that he's going to touch the truma, as the Gemara will explain soon why not. Rashi also mentions, by the way, and we learned this in Tosfos as well yesterday, that even though midrabanan amaretz are always considered tameh, but we don't go to the extent of considering them like zavim to say that anything that they carry will be without touching will become tamei. So we're not worried about that. Therefore, in the first case with the dough, the amaretz touches the kfisha or anchusa, but that's no problem because not makabel truma. In the second example, we're going to see later, the Gemara is going to explain what kind of keli this is, in the case of the olives, that we won't have a problem with that. The amaretz touching it won't be metameh it. He won't touch the truma or the challah inside it for reasons that we're going to explain soon. And as far as the amaretz carrying it, that the chachamim to begin with did not make the gzera that an amaretz that carries anything is metameh it, because that the chachamim figured that that's going too far. That's a gzera shein rei vatzibur yecholim lamed, but people are not going to be able to manage with such a gzera. Okay. So we have two dinim that Rabbi Yossi ben Amashulam said, one about making dough and one about processing olives. So why do we need both of them? The Gemara says, with tzricha, we need to be told in both cases. The Iyashmin and Gabal, if we were only told in the case of the kneader of dough, you would say, Mishum Delay Nafish Agra, you know what? He doesn't make very much money as it is. How much already are people gonna pay him to make the dough for him? So he's poor, so he needs to be able to make a living wherever he can, so therefore the Chachamim are going to give him a break and allow him to do this processing for the Amaretz, as long as it's done in a way that he's careful about Tumah V'Tahara. Ava Bada D'Nafish Agre, but on the other hand, an olive presser, who is paid a lot, pressing olives, first of all, you have a lot of olives, you have a large olive crop, and second of all, processing olives is a lot more of a labor-intensive and a lot more specialty task, so therefore a person gets paid a decent amount for that, so badad, the pashtus, makes a decent living. Amaloi, so maybe the chachamim wouldn't give him that break and allow him to prepare anything for the amaretz at all. Maybe we would tell them, look, get your customers exclusively by chaverim, or if you want to have amaretz as customers, then make sure you toivel them and their tailim first and whatever, and do that whole process. So therefore, we need to be told by the badad as well. The iyashmin and badad, on the other hand, if we were only told by the badad, you would say, mishum delo shchiachle. You would say, on the other hand, a badad, yes, he makes a nice amount of money for his work helping with the processing of olives, but it's only an annual thing. It's only once a year. There's an olive harvest, and therefore that's his season. The rest of the year, he has very little to do. Ava gabal de shchiachle, but the gabal has work all year round because people prepare dough all year round. Emalois, you would think that not. Tzricha, so therefore we need to be told in both cases, both by the gabel, who's making very little money for each job, and by the badar, who's making a lot of money for each job, but only during a certain season of the year, by both of them, the Chachamim gave them a break and allowed them to do work for an Amoretz as long as they do it in the way that we describe, where they're doing the processing from the beginning and put the chala or the truma in a keli and so on and so forth. Okay, so now Omamar, so now we said in the Braisa, we said that you take the challah from the dough, you put it in a kfisher or an anchosa, and then when the ma'aretz comes to pick it up, then he can pick up the challah with the keli, and there's no chashash, there's no concern, because the keli is not makabel truma. Well, the question is, fine, the keli is not makabel truma, isn't there the concern, though, that the ma'aretz may touch the actual challah itself? What's to prevent him from touching the challah that's inside the keli? Again, as Tosfos Yishanim said before, it's one thing if you had truma of your own that you were mafkid by an Ama Oretz, an Yisrael, then fine. Since Yisrael, Ama Oretz, is not, he knows that truma is off limits to him, so therefore he's not going to touch it because it's not for him to eat, and it's yours that you deposited with him. But here it comes from his dough, after all. As far as he's concerned, the Ama Oretz doesn't consider himself Tomei. Only we, Chaverim, consider him Tomei. So what's going to prevent him from touching the dough before he gives it to the Kohen, and then the Kohen's going to receive it, think that it's Tahor, and it's not. The answer is that we, meaning in this case, the gabel tells the Amoretz, Tachozi, pay attention, e nogas ba, if you touch this dough, hodra l'tivla, it will go back to being tevel. Now, the whole point is, the Amoretz was one of the Amei Oretz who's careful with challah. Now, not all of them are. The same way as we learned yesterday, that only Roiv Amei Oretz Ma'asun Hein, most Amei Oretz take Ma'asun, but there's a significant minority that don't. Well, the same way, you have Amei Oretz who are not careful about challah. This one obviously is. He's just not careful about Truma V'Tara. So we tell him, if you touch this piece, then it will go back to being tevel. Now, on one level, that can mean, obviously, that's not true. It's not going to go back to being tevel. It's still, the piece is still separated from the rest of the dough. So therefore, it's just kind of an empty threat. But the Amoretz, not knowing better, will think that it's a genuine threat and he'll be afraid to touch it. On the other hand, the Chassam Sofer says maybe it could be an actual serious, it could be an actual credible threat. The Chachamim have the ability to say maybe that if the Amoretz touches the dough, then retroactively it should be considered that the taking of challah was not valid, and therefore that the dough is tevel after all, and now the Amoretz is also to eat it unless he takes challah from it again. So it could be not just an empty threat, but a genuine one, and therefore that'll prevent him from touching it. So the Gemara asks why. The Amoretz may say, I don't care. What do I care if my dough goes back to being tevel? The answer is, the whole point is he was trying to fix up his dough. That's why he called in the gabel in the first place. Otherwise, he would have just prepared the dough himself and taken the challah himself. Do you think that he would care if it goes back to tevel? Of course he would care that it goes back to being tevel. Therefore he's not going to want to touch the challah, and therefore that way he can deliver the challah safely to the kohen, and it remains tahor, and the kohen will be able to eat it. Okay. Now in the case of the olives, in the case of the olive pressing, we said, we said he takes out from the olives, or more likely actually from the oil, he takes out enough for truma and puts it in a keli belonging to the chaver. And the same thing we said, when the amaretz comes to pick it up, he can pick up the truma inside the keli and there's no concern. You have the question again. Again, don't you have the problem that he may touch the truma, that he may touch the oil? Now, b'shleima hosam isrei hekera. Now, at least in the case of the challah, you can say there is a heker. The fact that the chaver put the challah into a kfisher or an anchosa, which again, according to Rashi, are worn out pieces of leather kalim, and according to Tosfos, and I think the Rambam holds the same way as well. They're flat wooden kalim. So therefore, there's a heker. You don't usually put dough on such things. So that'll remind the Amoretz that he's not supposed to be. That'll remind the Amoretz that he told the chaver he's not going to touch it. Ella, not Hocha Mai Hakera Isle, but over here, when it comes to the oil, what hecker is it? Just the fact that the keli belongs to the chaver rather than to the Am HaOretz is not going to be enough for the Am HaOretz to remember to not touch the oil. So leaving aside, fine, you can tell him if you touch the oil, it'll go back to being tevil, but never mind that. The point is, there's the threat of that, but what's to prevent him just from forgetting and touching it? The answer is the manachle, b'klei golem, b'klei avonim, b'klei adam. Because what it is he doesn't just put it in regular kalim, he puts it in klei golem, which are kalim made out of dried animal dung. Such things are not makabel truma. Or clay avonim, or kalim made out of stone, which are also not makabel truma, or clay adama, or kalim made out of unfired earthenware. None of those three are makabel truma. So therefore, so the chaver puts the oil into such a keli, and therefore, so now Rashi points out, if the amaretz touches the keli is not makabel truma. As far as the dough, or as far as the oil itself, he's not used to using such kalim, because such kalim, in fact, tend to be used only by chaverim, precisely for the reason that they're not makabel truma. Amei Oretz, who are not careful about truma v'tara, are not usually used to using such kalim. So therefore, that'll be a hecker for him to not touch the contents of the kalim. And the kalim itself, he's not matame, because such kalim are not makabel truma. So the Gemara asks, "Hachi my irya de chaver." In that case, then why do you need to mention that the keli belongs to the chaver? Afilu de ama oretz nami. And if the ama oretz happens to have a clay glolim or clay avonim or whatever, wouldn't that work too? And the answer is, "Hachi nami kamer." You're right. That is what the Braisa means when it says a keli of the chaver. Doesn't mean that the keli has to belong to the chaver. It just means the kelim shal ama oretz hora uyan leishtamish ben chaver. It has to be the kind of keli that an ama oretz may own the keli, but it's the kind that a chaver is able to use, namely that it's not makabel tumah, and therefore there's no concern that it ever became tameh by the ama oretz or by anybody in his household, and therefore now the chaver can use it to put the oil into that he designated as truma and give it to the Am HaOretz to bring to the Koyan, and there's no problem because there's no problem. The keli itself is not makabel truma from the Am HaOretz touching it. The fact that he's carrying it, as we said before, Rashi and Tosfos both explain that the Chachamim were never gozer to begin with, that an Am HaOretz carrying something is going to be matameh, only if, let's say, his wife, when she's a nida, were to carry it, then she would be matameh, but we're not concerned about that. It's also a hecker because an Am HaOretz does not regularly use such kalim. And as far as the contents of the keli, we warn him that if you touch it, it's going to go back to being tevil, and therefore he won't touch it. So that way you've covered all your bases. And again, the Chachamim are allowing this kind of thing in order to make it possible for a gabel or a badan to make a living. And therefore the Chachamim will allow him, as long as he takes these precautions, then everything of Tumah V'Tahara is taken care of, and therefore the Chachamim will allow it. Then we said in the Mishnah, so we got into that whole discussion, of course, because the Mishnah had told us about an Eishes Chaver helping out an Eishes Am HaOretz with preparing her food, and to what extent is she allowed and not allowed to help her. So now the Mishnah continued, other things that are allowed, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. That we said was an example of Mipnei Darkei Shalom in order to promote peace between one year than another, because if the chaver can't help out the Am HaOretz at all, then it's going to make it the Am HaOretz are really going to hold it against the Chachamim. So now, other examples in the Mishnah where we said things that are allowed in Darkei Shalom. We said, Machzikin Yedei Akum Bashvius, we're allowed to support Goyim who are working the land during Shvius. Now, the Gemara is assuming at this point that helping them, Machzikin, means to actually help them, to assist them with the work they're doing. So Gemara says, Machzikin, what do you mean help them? You're not allowed to help if you have a goy who's working on his field in Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah, and he's digging in the ground, for example. You can't help him with that digging on Shvius, because he may be allowed to do it, but you're not allowed to do it. And by the way, Rabbi Dimi Bar Sheshna says another din. This one applies all the time, not just doing Shvius. The in Kofen Shalom la'ovik echavim. You don't repeat the word Shalom when you're talking to a goy. In other words, the whole point that you're allowed to say Shalom to him is because of Dauke Shalom. So for that, you only need to say it once. You don't need to say it twice. Now, there are Rishonim who explain that that's only when you're using the word Shalom itself, because Shalom is a name of Hashem, so it's not really appropriate in the first place to use it regarding a guy, so they're but in the cave, but Mipnei Dafke Shalom, the Chachamim allowed it, but not to say twice. According to that, for example, saying hello or something like that wouldn't be an issue, because that is not a shame of Hashem. So according to that, it would be more an issue if you're, for example, in Israel, where everybody says Shalom, so then you wouldn't be able to say it twice to a guy. On the other hand, the Meiri has an explanation that the reason why not to say twice Shalom to him is because that creates too much intimacy, too much closeness between a Yid and a guy, and then you may end up becoming too friendly with him and learning from his ways. So then according to that, then it might be an issue even with saying hello twice. Anyway, the point is that Rav Gimi Bar Sheshna is telling us that if a goy is digging in his field on Shvius, for example, you're not allowed to help him with that or any other agricultural work. So what do you mean, machzikin, that you'd be allowed to help them? Now, Tosfos points out there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that implies that there are cases where a Yid is able to do work in a field during Shemitah. And in fact, Rashi learns over there that the case is the Yid was hired by a goy. Tosfos says, based on our Gemara over here, it seems that not. But you have a case, for example, where a person has to pay X amount in taxes to the king. So then there's sakonas nefashis. If you don't pay it, the king, the government is not going to accept the excuse that it's Shemitah and I can't. And Tosfos gives several other possibilities. Maybe it's only when Shvius is derabbanan, etc., etc. Anyway, there can be hatarim for it, but it's not so simple. You do find, by the way, in Jewish history, there were times, for example, Josephus tells us when Alexander the Great conquered Eretz Yisrael, he they're going to have to pay him taxes from now on instead of to the Persians, but he specially exempted the Jews from taxes during Shemitah because he knew that they told him that they're not going to be able to work the land during Shemitah. So in different times in Jewish history, the Goyish authorities did that. But there were times when they didn't, and therefore those were times when the Chachamim would allow, because of the Kuach Nefesh, when the Chachamim would have to allow Jews to work the land during Shemitah. Anyway, the point is, so we're getting back to the Gemara over here, so we're saying, again, that the Mishnah said machzikin, which presumably means that you're allowed to help them with their work, but then Rav Gimi Bar Sheshna is telling us in the name of Rav that you can't. The answer is, lo tzricha lememra lehu achzuku ba'alma. The answer is yes, but what the Mishnah means, what the Mishnah is coming to tell us, is just you're allowed to tell them good job or be strong or something like that. Ki hod Rav Yehuda omlehu achzuku. Rav Yehuda would say to them just that. Rav Yehuda, if he saw a guy working his land doing shmita, he would tell them achzuku, be strong, like tachzak niyadechem, do a good job. Rav Sheshes, Amalahu Ashauta, Rav Sheshes would tell them a lotion of Ashauta, which is also a lotion of being strong, like he would tell them congratulations or good job or something like that. Tosfos brings a different thing from the Yerushalmi, that it would mean, according to the Yerushalmi brings two opinions. One is that to a goy you're allowed to tell him, I see you plowing your field. Do a good job of it. Do a very good plowing. And next year, after Shemitah, I will be interested in buying this field from you. So like you're encouraging him to do the best possible job with the promise that eventually you're going to want to buy the field from him. So you would be allowed to do that. If you see a Yisrael, you say to him, not doing Shemitah, when he's working during Shemitah, but in general, you see a Yid working, then you say to him, Yishar, like you should be strong. And then the Yerushalmi brings another opinion, a goy, you're only allowed to say Yishar, a Yisrael, you can say Shalom Aleichem. So that would mean, Tosfos says, now the Yerushalmi evidently is disagreeing with our Gemara that says that you're allowed to say Shalom once to a goy, but not twice. The Yerushalmi is implying that you can't even say Shalom once to a goy. But the Yerushalmi is also saying that when we're saying machzikim yedei nochem b'shvius v'sholem b'shloimam, not like we're saying over here in the Bavli, that these are two different dinim. Number one, you're allowed to strengthen him, meaning we said verbally, during shvius. And number two, any other time, you're allowed to say sholem. According to the Yerushalmi, the two things are really one. In shvius, you're allowed to tell him an expression that says that to plow it very well, do a good job, and next to you, I want to buy it from you after shvius. And that was so it amounts to the same thing. You're being sholem b'shloimam. You're asking after his welfare with the intention of actually buying from him later on. So that's what it means anyway, getting back to the Bavli over here, getting back to the Gemara. So that's what it means that when saying that you support Goyim doing Shemitah, it means that you congratulate them and you say to them, good job, or expressions like that. Now, we said, Be'en Kofman Shalom La'ovit V'chavim, you don't repeat Shalom to a Goy. So the Gemara points out how different Chachamim dealt with that issue. Rav Chista Machtim B'Yov Lahu Shlomo, Rav Chista would initiate the greeting. When he met a Goy, he would initiate the greeting before the other guy does. Because that way, the idea was that back then, the understanding was that if you meet somebody and you have one person would initiate the greeting, would say hello, for example, the other one would it was the polite thing to respond with something bigger. So now, if the Goy says Shalom first, then Rav Chista will be forced to say something more back, which might include saying twice Shalom, or according to the Me'iri, twice of any kind of hello, and that would be a problem. So therefore, Rav Chista would initiate the greeting first. That way, he only has to say Shalom, and that way, he's not being over on what we're saying over here. Rav Kahana, Omalei Shlomo Lamar, Rav Kahana, when he would meet a Goy, he would say the expression Shlomo Lamar, peace to the Mar, to the Rebbe. Now, what does that mean? Rashi explains that he wasn't actually really meaning to address the Goy at all. A Goy is not Mar. A Goy is not a ruler over the Jewish people. So it means that in his heart, he was thinking of his Rebbe, that he's saying Shalom to his Rebbe. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because it's still Gnevas Das. It's still, you're misleading the Goy. You're making them think that you're showing respect to him, and really you're not. So rather, Tosfos says it just means that he would say Shlomo Lamar, and that way he would avoid having to say twice Shalom, because the idea would be, in other words, other Mephoshim explain what Tosfos means is by saying Shlomo Lamar, that way the even if Rav Kahana was not the first one to greet, even if the other guy said Shalom first, but Rav Kahana is replying Shlomo Lamar, even only once, then that would be enough. The Goy would be appeased by that, and he doesn't require that he's not going to consider it impolite that Rav Kahana is not saying twice Shalom. So it worked out that way. Marshav here refers to something that he says in Gemara Brachas. There's Gemara Brachas that says that if you greet a person, if the Gemara says you greet a person and he doesn't reply Shalom, then in fact, by the way, Marshal says about this that when he would say Shlomo Lamar, meaning in other words, he would say individually to each Goy that he saw Shlomo Lamar, rather than this way he doesn't have to say it twice to any one Goy, or he might even be, it means like he would see a group of Goy, he would say Shlomo Lamar to all of them generically, rather than having to say Shalom to each one individually. Anyway, Marshal refers to something he says in Brachas. The Gemara says over there that if one person greets another and the other one doesn't respond, then he's called a goizel. It's like he's stealing from the first person the fact that he had an opportunity to give him a bracha and he didn't. So Marusha says over there, therefore, that's why Rav Chista in particular is saying in our Gemara was with a yid, he wouldn't necessarily initiate the greeting first, because what if the yid doesn't respond? Then Rav Chista has caused him to be a gazlan. On the other hand, with a goy, Rav Chista doesn't care about that, so therefore he'll go ahead and initiate the greeting first. This way he wanted to say Shalom twice, but this way also, if the goy doesn't respond, if the goy wants to be a gazlan, big deal, that's not Rav Chista's problem. Okay. We said in the mission of a Shoylem B'Shloiman, we said that you're allowed to inquire after the welfare of Goyim, or you should inquire after their welfare. Now, so the Yerushalmi that we said before, as Tosfos said, understands that Shoylem B'Shloiman is part of the Machzik and Yidah Ovid Kuchavim B'Shavias. That it means that during Shavias, you say to them something that you say to them congratulations, and you say, do a good job, and I'll buy it from you after. But here the Bavli is understanding that it's a separate statement, that there's a separate din that will show them the Shlomo Bnei Dakei Shalom. The question is, why do we need to say that? Hashtag Zuki Machzikinan. If you're telling us that we can even support them verbally and tell them good job, show them the Shlomo Bnei Boya, would we need to be told that you can ask after their welfare? Of course you could. The answer is, Amar Abyeva, Le Nitzrucha Elo V'yom Chagam. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is even on their Chagah, even on a Goyish festival. We're not concerned that saying Shalom to the Goy is going to make him so happy that he's going to go thank his Abba Dezorah for that. We don't have to be concerned about that. Detanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Lo yikonis odom lebeisar shal ev kechavim bein eide v'yitin l'sholem. On the day of a goyish holiday, a yid is not allowed to go into a goy's house and say shalom to him, because that's really showing the goy a lot of respect and a lot of honor, and therefore the goy may be so pleased by that he's going to go thank his getchke, and that way you, the yid, have been over on lifnei iver, causing him to worship avodah zarah more than he would have otherwise. But matzah instead, so you don't go into his house to say shalom, but matzah b'shuk, if you meet up with a goy on the street on such a day, you are allowed to say shalom to him, but you say it like weakly and seriously, like you do it in a way almost like the way an oval would greet somebody. So, but the point is, you are allowed to say shalom to them, and we're not concerned that he's going to then go and thank his getchka for that. So, since we're talking about saying shalom, so now the Gemara brings a contrasting story. Here we were talking about not saying shalom twice to a goy. Now we have the opposite when it comes to Talmid Chachamim. And this piece of Gemara especially fits nicely according to the Meiri, who says the reason why you shouldn't say shalom twice to a goy, or any kind of thing, or any kind of greeting twice, is because you're going to be inappropriately close to him. But here, by a Talmid Chacham, Adarama, you want to be close to a Talmid Chacham as possible, and therefore, as the Gemara is going to say, you should say shalom twice to them. So the Gemara tells Rav Huna and Rav Chista Havu Yasvi. Rav Huna and Rav Chista were one time sitting together. Cholif ba'ozer Gniva. And Gniva came and passed by. Now Gniva, we've had a couple of times in the Masechta already. He was a Talmud of Rav. He's mentioned here and there in Halachas throughout Shas. But at the beginning of the Masechta, we had that he was causing trouble for Ma'ukva. He was harassing him and being a Baal Machlokas, and Ma'ukva is very upset about it, and he wants to even master on Gniva to the government to get him to stop. And Rabbi Elazar tells him don't, and Rabbi Elazar tells him that you be patient, Hashem will deal with him. And eventually, it says in the Gemara over there on Zion Amun Aleph, eventually Gniva was arrested by the government. So we're going to have the end of his story is going to be later on Daf Samach Hei. We're going to talk about what happened with him in the end when he was arrested. But anyway, right now he was still around and about. So he's walking by, and Rav Chista and Rav Huna and Rav Chista see him. So one of them says to the other, we had a similar story on Daf Lamed Aleph as well, also involving these two Chachamim and Gniva. So one of them said we should stand up for him because it's Talmid Chacham. Omaloy, and the other one says, when we come with Pargon Nekum, you want us to stand up in front of a Baal Machlokas, you stand up in front of a Talmid Chacham, that's a Talmid Chacham who's acting the way he's supposed to, not this Gniva who's a Baal Machlokas. And is harassing Ma'ukva and not acting like the way a Talmud Chacham should act. In fact, so we had basically the same first half of the story over there. Marshall points out. So there we have. It doesn't mention anything about him saying shalom over there, because there the Gemara just wants to get into a topic that we were talking over there about the different winds that come from different parts, from different directions, and the effects on them. Here the main point is we want to focus on the way he said shalom to them. In other words, Marshall seems to understand that it's all one story. He came over to them and said shalom. He was walking by. They're thinking, should we stand up for him? Should we not? Then he comes over and says shalom to them twice. And they get into a discussion about that, as we're going to say in our Gemara. And then he asks them, so what have you been talking about? And they tell him about Ruchos, and then they have a discussion about that. So it would be two parts of the same story that the Gemara just splits up and tells each part in its appropriate place. Anyway. So Adahochi Osi Ihu Legabayu, so he came over to them. Omalu Shloma Aleichu Malchi, Shloma Aleichu Malchi. He says to them, Shalom Aleichem kings, Shalom Aleichem kings. Omrulay, so they ask him, Manolach the Rabban and Ikru Malachim, where do you get that Talmid Chachamim are called kings that you're calling us that? Omrulahu, he says, Dichdiv bi Malachim yim loichu. The grammar of the Pasuk says, through me, the Torah, kings rule. So therefore, yes, so a Talmid Chacham who studies Torah is called a king. We have in Tirkei Avos, after all, we have that G'dola Torah, Yosem and Akonom and Amalchus. So yeah, this is where we get the expression "man malchi rabbanon." Who are the kings? Are the Talmid Chacham? And omru leyum nolach to kaflin and shalom lemalchi. Where do you see this concept that you say twice shalom to a king, or in this case to a Talmid Chacham? Omru who? He says the omer of Yehuda Amarav minayin shakoflin shalom lemalach. How do we know that you say shalom twice to a king? Shenema, we have the posuk. We say it in and Motzei Shabbos in V'yitin Lecha, the Ruach Lov Shas Amosai Rosh HaShalushim V'Gomer, previously in the Pasuk, it describes how when David is still hiding out from Shaul, at one point, a contingent of people from Binyamin, led by Amosai, who was David's nephew from Shevet Yehuda, comes to see him, and David says, what are you here for? Are you here to join my forces, or are you here to betray me to Shaul? And Beruach Lov Shas Amosai Rosh HaShalushim, a spirit from Hashem enclosed Amosai, the head of the captains, and he says to David, he continues over there, V'cha David V'imcha Men Yishai, Shalom, Shalom L'cha, V'shalom L'Azrecha, peace to you, and peace to your helpers. So, and then the Pasuk says that David took them into his group and made them heads of the unit over there, right? Vayitnim B'roshay Agdud. The point is, we see that Amosai said twice, Shalom, Shalom L'cha, and David, at that, he's acknowledging David as the legitimate king of the Jewish people, so therefore we see from that you say Shalom twice to a king. Maharsha explains the symbolism of it is that a king is supposed to make Shalom here on earth, and a Talmid Chacham, a regular person, makes Shalom here on earth. A king or a Talmid Chacham is supposed to make Shalom in the Pamalia Shamayim or Pamalia Shamata, in Shamayim, among the Malachim in Shamayim, and on earth. So therefore, so a Talmid Chacham and a king are supposed to be told Shalom twice. And Maharsha also adds that what Amosai is saying, he says further in the pasuk, Ki azorcha elekecha, Hashem is helping you, meaning he's saying to David in the previous pasuk, you're asking, are you coming to help me? You should realize, David, you don't need us to help you. Ki azorcha elekecha, Hashem is helping you. Okay, so that's where we get Shalom twice to a king. Amrila lite marmidi, they said, come, Rebbe, taste something. He says no. Chochi Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Also, by the Adam Shiyitin Klum Ad Shiyitin Maichol Behemta. A person is not allowed to even taste anything until he gives food to his animals. Shenemer V'nasati Esim V'sod Chalavam Techa V'Hoder. And only then V'Achalta V'Sabata. Hashem says, I'll give grass in the fields for you animals. And only then does it say you will eat and you'll be satisfied. So you have to feed your animals first. Now there are Rishonim who have the Girsa not Shiyitim but rather Shiyoychal. So according to that, it would mean you'd be allowed to eat something, you just wouldn't be allowed to have a full meal. But here the Gur says, Shiyitim, that he's not even allowed to taste anything. There are details in that, and they discuss, for example, does that apply only to work animals? Does it also apply to pets? There's also the interesting point that Sefer Chassidim says that's as far as food. As far as drinks, people come first, as we find in Parshas Chukas, Vishtisa Se'edav Es Be'iram, that we find that Hashem tells Moshe, bring water from the rock, and you'll give water to the people and to their animals. You also find by the Yezer, Eved Avraham, that he gave, that Rivka gave water first to him and then to the camels. So water or drinks come first for people, but food comes first for animals, as the Gemara is saying over here. Now this next perek ha'omer on Omid Beis. Now we're getting back to topics of gittin. Back in the fourth perek on Daf Lamed Beis, we started with the dinim of shlichus and gittin. Then we digressed to talk about things that they took in the olam because we had over there when the husband is able and not a. When the husband is no longer able to be mevatel the get because of a takana of Rav Gamliel, which was mifnei tikkun olam, because of a takana of Rav Gamliel azaken, mifnei tikkun olam. So that led us into a whole bunch of other things that are mifnei tikkun olam and mifnei dakei shalom. Now we're getting back to matters of shlichus in gittin. An interesting thing is, it seems that Rashi had, and the Rosh definitely has, the next perek, Misha Ochzai, which we have as the seventh perek, Rashi seems to have had, and the Rosh definitely had that as the sixth perek. However, Tosfos explains over here that the order that we have is more fitting, because now we're getting back to matters of shlichus that we interrupted early in the fourth perek. Then after that comes in our perek, we're going to talk about a case where a husband says to two or three people, write a get for me and my wife. And then afterwards, then you have Misha Ochzai, which also talks about a case where a person is saying to people to write a get. And the question is, there is he of completely sound mind to do that? And then after that, you have the rest of the perekim, as opposed to according to Rashi's and the Rosh's order, then the next perek, Misha Ochzai, would be a little bit out of place. Anyway, So now in our parak, we're going to deal with the dinim of shlichus as far as getting. Now we have to keep in mind there are three kinds of shliach that we're going to be dealing with. There is shliach halacha, which is the husband appoints a shliach to bring the get to his wife. That shliach is standing in place of the husband. In other words, the same way in a normal situation, the husband hands his wife the get. In this case, the shliach takes the get and hands it to the wife, and it's considered as though it's coming from the husband. That's a shliach halacha. Then you have the opposite of that is called shliach kabbalah. The opposite number to that is a shliach kabbalah, which is a shliach that the wife appoints to receive the get on her behalf. And when the shliach kabbalah receives the get, it's considered as though the wife received it, and therefore it takes effect. Then you have sort of in between them, you have what's called shliach hava, which is also a shliach that's appointed by the wife, but his job is not that as soon as he receives the get, then it takes effect. Rather, his job is to bring the get from the husband or from his shliach to the wife, but only when he brings it to her is it going to take effect. So shliach halacha is appointed by the husband, a shliach kabbalah and a shliach hava are appointed by the wife. So here we're going to start talking about the various kinds of shluchim and what the dinim are with each one of them. So the Mishnah says, Ha'omer hiskabo get zele ishti. A husband says to a shliach, receive this get for my wife. Now, the husband can't appoint a shliach kabbalah, because the husband can only appoint a shliach halacha. Therefore, when he says hiskabo get zele ishti, he hasn't yet made that get has actually, he hasn't actually been mizaka the get to the wife yet. Now, it's not a schus for her, because a get is a choiv for her, because after all, when she receives the get, when the get takes effect, then she loses mizonis, she loses support, and so forth for her husband. So the get has not taken effect yet by the husband telling the shliach, bring this get to my wife. In fact, the Rashba brings based on the Yerushalmi. Now, you could have a case, for example, where the wife really does want to get divorced. She's saying explicitly, I want it. Nevertheless, there is always the concern that maybe she changed her mind or something. Anyway, so the husband says, Iskabel gets elishti, oi hoilach gets elishti, or he says, bring this get to my wife. Either way, if he wants to change his mind and decide not to divorce her, then he can do that because the get has not yet taken effect. And you can't say he's mezakeh through somebody else because, again, it's not a schus for her. Generally speaking, a get is a choiv for her. And even if you have the particular case where he or she wants to be divorced, nonetheless, we still consider it a choiv because she may change her mind or something. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, Ha'isha sha'omre hiskabel ligiti, but if the wife said to a shliach, receive my get for me, meaning that she appointed somebody a shliach kabbalah, and the husband gave the get to that shliach kabbalah, imrot lachzer lo yachzer, now once the husband gave it to the shliach kabbalah, he can't change his mind, because this is a shliach kabbalah. As soon as he receives the get, it takes effect. So therefore, now it's too late for the husband to change his mind once he gave it. So lefichach, now therefore, what should the husband do if he still wants to leave himself an out and to change his mind? So if a shliach kabbalah came, im omalai habal e efshisha to kabbalah elaholach patenla, if the husband says to the shliach kabbalah, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah, I don't want to give it to you as a shliach kabbalah, elaholach patenla, instead I am making you into a shliach halacha, you can be my shliach to bring it to her. So then he still has the ability to change his mind, because now what he's done is he's undone. He's saying, you were a shliach kabbalah until now, but I am undoing that, and I am overriding that, and making it that now you're only a shliach halacha. So that would work. But if he leaves him as a shliach kabbalah and gives him the get, then at that point it's too late for him to change his mind. Reb Shimon Gamliel Oima, Afai Meres Toli Giti. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, also, even if she doesn't appoint a shliach kabbalah, even if she appoints a shliach hava, so she's saying, bring me my get, then it's also, imrat alachzer layachzer, then the Reb Shimon Gamliel says also, if a husband gives that shliach the get, he wouldn't be able to change his mind, even though the guy's not a shliach kabbalah. The get takes effect only when she receives it, but because she made the shliach and said, totally gitti, then Reb Shimon Gamliel would say the husband can't change his mind either, and the only way he could is if to begin with, before he gives the get, he says, you're no longer a shliach halacha, you're a shliach hava. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Acha Brei Rav Ibyel and Rav Ash. Now, what are we saying in the beginning of the Mishnah? That when the husband says, Holach get zel ishti, the reason why, so he's making him a shliach halacha. Why are we saying he's able to change his mind? Or for that matter, in the first words, his skabel get zel ishti. So he says his skabel, which is a lashon of Kabbalah, but because the wife didn't appoint him, and only the wife can appoint a shliach Kabbalah. By the way, the Gemara in Kiddushin learns these various details from Sukkim, how we know the husband can appoint a shliach, how we know this woman can appoint a shliach on her behalf, etc. Anyway. So he's saying because she didn't appoint that shliach, because the husband said holach get zel ishti, the husband can't make a shliach kabbalah, and the wife only and the husband only made him a shliach halacha. So we're saying the wife did not make him a shliach kabbalah. The shaviti ish shliach kabbalah. The wife had not made him a shliach kabbalah. Ha shaviti ish shliach kabbalah. It sounds like though if the wife had made the shliach kabbalah and the husband says holach. So he didn't actually, it wasn't like later in the Mishnah where he says, I don't want you to be a Shliach Kabbalah, I want you to be a Shliach Halacha. He or the husband doesn't just say anything like that. He just says the Shliach comes as a Shliach Kabbalah from the wife. The husband says, Hoylich, and was saying, it sounds like, Rotzalach Zolo Yasser. It sounds like in that case also, the husband can't change his mind. So when he says, when the husband says on his own, Hoylich gets on the Ishti, then he can change his mind. But it sounds like, if the wife had said, you be makabel my get, you be a shliach kabbalah, and the husband gives it to the shliach and says holach, then at that point he couldn't change his mind anymore. And Tosfa says, then the reason would be, so why would the Mishnah be saying his skabel is saying that when the husband says his skabel implies that the wife didn't say anything to him to begin with, because if he comes and presents himself and says, I'm shliach kabbalah, there's no reason for the husband to say his skabel. And therefore, the same thing would be by holach. Also, it means that she never said anything. So, shmamina holach kazochi gami. Does that show then that saying to, which was a point that we learned earlier in the Masechta, that when you say to somebody holach, bring this to somebody, then it's the equivalent of saying zechi. It's the equivalent of saying be zoichen it on her behalf. Which back on Daf Yudalah in the first paragraph, we learned a machlokas about that, whether that works. So we talked about over there in Dinei Mamonos. So for example, Reuven owes Shimon money, let's say, and he sends with a shliach, and he says, Hoylech, bring this money to Shimon. Does that amount to that the shliach has acquired it on behalf of Shimon, because Zochen La'odim Shalei B'fanav, and now Reuven can't take it back? Or not, to be said that Hoylech is lav kizchi gami, and therefore Reuven could still change his mind and take it back. Here, in our Mishnah, the implication seems to be Hoylech kizchi gami, because we're saying that if the wife said, you be a shliach kabbalah, and the husband says Hoylech, so that's enough to be zircha on behalf of the wife. The answer is loy, not necessarily. You could say that holach is not generally like hiskabel. So rather, not like Tosfos had said that the word hiskabel is only there to say that hiskabel and holach are similar with the wife not having appointed anybody. Rather, the Mishnah is mentioning the word hiskabel deliberately. Because the Mishnah is saying Hoylach gets zel ishti where she didn't appoint anybody, and it's mentioning that to go with the din of his skabel legiti. Where's the sakud and chamina? Now, when the husband said his skabel, Hoyl baal lavar shavi shliach kabbalahu, given that the husband is not able to make a shliach kabbalah because a shliach kabbalah is standing in place of the wife, and so obviously the husband can't appoint a shliach on behalf of the wife. So given that, when the husband says his skabel, then afagav the mota gita liyadu loyla heva gita, you would think that when the husband says his skabel, then maybe it shouldn't work even when the get reaches the wife, because maybe we would say that she didn't appoint any shliach. The husband had not appointed the valid kind of shliach. And he didn't say the word hoylach, he said his skabel. So you would think that maybe in that case nobody's done anything the way they should, so maybe the get shouldn't work. Kamash Malon, therefore the Mishnah is telling us, his skabel, the hoylach ka'amar, that the word his skabel means his skabel received this get, and implicitly it also means hoylach bring it to her. So now, the Mishnah is saying, in other words, that whether he said his skabel, which implies hoylach, or whether he explicitly said holach, either way, the guy is a shliach halacha, And when he brings the get to the wife, then he's standing in the place of the husband, and therefore the get will take effect. So not like we thought that the Mishnah is implying anything about whether the wife appointed the shliach or not. No, we're talking strictly the husband appointed. But the point is, we would have thought that if the husband uses the word hiskabel, maybe it's no good, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us hiskabel works because it implies holach. And the same thing if you said holach explicitly. Okay, the Mishnah says tnan. Well, let's look at the continuation of our Mishnah. And see whether it fits better according to the opinion that holach kizchi dami or not. The Mishnah had continued, ha'isha she'omri skabel ligiti. We said when the wife says, receive my get for me, so she's appointing a shliach kabbalah, who again, that shliach stands in her place, and it's considered once that shliach receives that get, then the get takes effect. So the Mishnah says, imrotha lachso layachso. So if after the husband gives the shliach kabbalah the get, then he can't change his mind. My love, loishna kabbalah, loishna halacha. Shouldn't we assume that the Mishnah is referring back to the Reisha? So whether the husband, so the wife did appoint a shliach kabbalah, and now whether the husband tells the shliach his skabel, or whether he tells him holach, then either way it would work. So that must be holach kizchidami. Otherwise, if you said holach lav kizchidami, the husband didn't give it to the shliach intending for it to take effect right away. The guy comes and says, I'm a shliach kabbalah. The husband says, holach, which implies, in other words, doesn't that imply that he's saying, I don't want it to take effect right away? If still the Mishnah says he can't change his mind, that must mean nevertheless it does take effect right away. Why? Because holach is chidami. So wouldn't that prove that? The answer is loy, a kabbalah, not necessarily. That case may be referring only to when the husband says his skabel. So in other words, the event would have been over here. The wife says, I'm making you a shliach kabbalah. The guy comes to the husband and says, I'm a shliach kabbalah. The husband says, fine, his skabel, receive this get, and as soon as you receive it, it'll take effect. Now he gave it to the wife. Now he gave it to the shliach. Now he can't change his mind. Not necessarily, though, if the husband in that scenario instead had said a holach, not necessarily would the Mishnah be implying that the husband can't change his mind. Maybe by saying holach, in effect he's saying, I don't want you to be zoche in it yet on her behalf until she actually receives it. And that would be holach lav kizchidami. So you can't prove from the Mishnah one way or the other. Okay, Toshma, let's look at the continuation of the Mishnah. If the husband says explicitly, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah, rather I want to change your shlichus and make you a shliach halacha, then the Mishnah says he could still change his mind. Now, the implication is, if he says holach betemla, then he can still change his mind because he made him only a shliach holacha, and therefore the get does not take effect yet until it reaches her. So taima de omi efshi. So the implication in the Mishnah seems to be because the husband explicitly said efshi, I do not want this get to take effect until she receives it. Then therefore, so we're saying that doesn't work yet. Holoi omi efshi, but the implication seems to be that if he didn't actually say that explicitly, he just said holach betenma, then imrotha lachso mayachso. It sounds like if he wants to change his mind at that point, he can. Because it just means that, so he came as a shliach kabbalah, the husband didn't explicitly say, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah, he's just saying holach, and was saying it works, shramina holach is chi dami. Wouldn't that show that holach is the equivalent of chi? Otherwise, the husband wouldn't even have to say, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah. Just saying a holach amounts to saying that I'm giving it to you, but it doesn't take effect until she receives it. So only if we say holach kizchidami would we understand the Mishnah on the face of it. The Gemara answer is no, because dilma behelach. Because maybe the Mishnah does not mean holach v'tenla, maybe the Mishnah means helach. Here it is, and give it to her. So he's not saying anything about halacha or not. He's just saying, halach, here it is, and I'm giving it to you. Now, Tosfa says the Gemara is not actually trying to change the wording of the Mishnah. The Gemara is just saying that there was some chachamim who had a version of the Mishnah that said halach. Now, why are we talking not changing the wording? Sometimes we do. The fact is, sometimes we do find where the Gemara will edit a Mishnah and point out that the wording of it is incorrect. So Marsha says that later on, we're going to have in the Gemara on Daf Samach Gimel, we're going to use the Gemara is going to mention over there. Aren't we talking about that the Mishnah said Halach, and then there's a contradiction from that? So if we're actually editing the Mishnah, then what's the question? Just don't edit the Mishnah and don't have the question. So therefore, that's why Tosfos wants to understand that we're not actually changing the wording of the Mishnah. We're just saying there were different versions of the Mishnah going around, and one of them said instead of Halach, said Halach, which means therefore that he's telling him, you take it and bring it to her. There's different other points that different other Mephoshim talk about why Maharam Shif says also if the Gemara actually meant to say that the wording of the Mishnah as we have it is wrong and it should say Halach, then the Gemara's expression shouldn't be Dilma Ba'oma Halach, it should be Tony Halach, read the Mishnah that it says Halach. Okay, so no proof of the other, from one way or the other from the Mishnah about whether Halach is Chidomi or not. Now let's talk about some dinim of who's able to be what kind of shliach. Pshita isha habi shliach leilach. It's obvious to start with that a man can be a shliach leilacha. Shekain baal merlech get leishle. Because after all, the husband himself would be able to give the get to his wife. So therefore, another man can stand in his place and be a shliach for the same thing. Given that the whole concept of shlichus, we learn from the fact that it says in the Torah, v'shilcha mibesa, where the Gemara in Kiddushin explains that it could have said v'shilach, and instead it says v'shilcha, and from there we learn the concept of shlichus, so therefore so it means that a man like him can do it. Similarly, isha have a shliach kabbalah, similarly a woman can be a shliach kabbalah appointed by the wife, she can isha kabbalah's gitum yad baila, because by the same token a wife herself can receive her get directly from the husband, therefore she can appoint a woman to be her shliach instead. What about isha kabbalah v'isha lahu locha mai? What about can a man be a shliach kabbalah or a woman be a shliach locha? Now, we do have, earlier in the Masechta, we learned you can even have a case where the wife herself brings her get as a shliach halacha and says, b'fani nechta, b'fani nechta. At this point, the Gemara has not taken that into consideration yet. So would it be allowed? So Toshma, let's look at our Mishnah. We said a husband says to somebody, receive this get from my wife, or bring this get to my wife, if he wants to change his mind, we said he still could, because the get hasn't taken effect yet, but if the wife says, receive my get for me, or imrata lachso lo yachser, then the husband can't change his mind. Now, my lab b'chad shliach. Shouldn't we assume that all these cases in Mishnah are talking about the same shliach? So the husband says to him, holach or iskabel, or the same person, the woman could have said to him, hiskabel, which would mean that the same person could be either a shliach halacha or shliach kabbalah, or shmamina koshala kabbalah koshala halacha. Well, and that would tell us anybody who could be a shliach kabbalah can be a shliach halacha. The Gemara answer is not. No, it could be two different groups, two different people. The first part of the Mishnah is talking about the husband saying to a man. The second part is talking about the wife saying to a woman. Okay, Toshma, let's continue in the Mishnah. If the husband says, I don't want you to receive it for her to be a shliach kabbalah, ela holach v'tenla, but rather be a shliach holacha and give it to her, imrata lachzer yachzer, there we say he can change his mind. Now, v'hohocha b'chad shliachu, here obviously it's one shliach, because the wife appointed him a shliach kabbalah, and now the husband is turning him into a shliach holacha, or shmamina koshala kabbalah, koshala holacha. So therefore, we see from that anybody who's kosher as a shliach kabbalah is also kosher as a shliach halach. Good. Pshut mina isha v'shliach kabbalah. So therefore, fine. We can answer from that a man can be a shliach kabbalah because therefore, so he can be a shliach halach. Therefore, he can also be a shliach kabbalah. So now we have a different way of proving actually that a husband could be a man can be a shliach kabbalah. Because she can't have the kabbal get b'tei ktana. Because after all, a father can be a shliach to receive a get on behalf of his daughter when she's a ktana, or a naira for that matter, where they are, her kiddushin were fully valid daraisa because her father was makamishur, and the father can receive her get on her behalf. So therefore we see a man can be a shliach kabbal. So that's a different way of proving that he could. But what about isha lo hilacha tibor lach mai? We still have the question though, what about can a woman be a shliach hilacha? And the answer is, Amar Amari, Toshma, we can prove from a Mishnah earlier in our Masechta, We said you have five kinds of women who we assume that they don't like a certain woman. We have, for example, her mother-in-law, her sister-in-law, the different kinds of sister-in-law, whether married to her brother or whether they're two, whether they're married to two brothers or whether it's her husband's sister. Either kind, you have her stepdaughter, etc. So we said, we learned in Yevamos that such women generally don't like the woman in question, and therefore, for example, they're not allowed to say Eidos that her husband died, because we're concerned that they may be saying false Eidos so that she'll rely on them and remarry and then get in trouble when the husband turns up. But the Mishnah says, Apam Nashim She'en Nehem Monas Loma Mesbaila, even these women who we don't trust them to say that the husband died, and then Monas Lahavias Gita, we do believe them to bring the get, because they have a get with them, and we're not concerned that they went and forged a get. So v'hasam halacha. He said there it's a shliach halacha, and we see that a woman can bring it. Therefore, that shows that yes, a woman can be a shliach halacha. Amar of Ashim is sefer nami shemamina. You can also see it from the sefer, from the continuation of that same mishnah. The katani sefer ha'isha atzma mivias gita. The wife herself can bring the get from the dinas hayam as a shliach. Where she has to say we explain when we learned that previously on Daf Chav Dalet, we explained that the husband made her a shliach for her own get. So the husband tells her, I don't want the get to take effect right away. When I'm giving it to you, I want you to bring it to such and such a beis din, and you tell them b'fanenechtam, and then they will take it from you and give it to you on my behalf. So therefore, we see also that she's a shliach halacha, and therefore you see that it works for a shliach halacha to be a woman. So the Gemara says, good, shma mina, that shows it. So yes, either a man or a woman can be either a shliach kabbalah or a shliach halacha. Shkoyach, everyone.